This is Ralph Nader, and you're listening to Radio Powered by the People, KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, 98.7 FM, Santa Barbara, and across the globe at kpfk.org.
Maria Hall. This is the Lawyers Guild show. My wonderful co-host Jim Lafferty is traveling today, so he won't be joining us, but we will do our best without him. And luckily, we have wonderful guests. Today, we'll be talking for the entire hour, which is a special edition for us, with Matthew Solomon, director of the award-winning documentary film Reimagining Safety, and also Nikki Black, who's a sociologist and abolitionist who's featured in the film. So with that said, we will just jump right in, and 30 seconds of just letting people know this is the last of KPFK's fun drive. So if you haven't yet, you probably already have, but if not, it's not too late. Jump on kpfk.org as you're listening and make your pledge for free speech radio. Okay, so back in the summer of 2020, people all over the world took to the streets to protest the murder of George Floyd and others who were brutalized by police. And the people were calling for an end to police brutality, racism, and mass incarceration. The slogan, "Defund the police," made headlines even on the mainstream news and prompted many of us to imagine a world where the lion's share of our tax dollars were not being spent on police, prisons, and war. Of course, the concept of abolishing modern policing wasn't invented in 2020. For over a century, when the U.S. established its first militarized police force, critics noted, this institution can't help but be racist, unfair, and brutal because it's that way by design. So, in 2020, when thousands poured into the streets, it seemed possible that change was coming. But now, here we are in 2024, on the brink of a critical presidential election, and the pendulum seems to be swinging the other direction. Or is it? Today on the Lawyers Guild show, we'll be talking about Reimagining Safety, an award-winning documentary film directed by Matthew Solomon and featuring Nikki Black, both of whom are joining us this hour. Reimagining Safety has been screened at more than 60 community events across the country, and congratulations, it was just named Best Film by a group called Evident Change as part of their National Media for a Just Society Awards. And we'll tell you a little later on where you can see the film. So in addition to being the film's director, Matthew Solomon hosts the podcast, Conversations for the People. He's also a conflict resolution facilitator, which we definitely need more of in our world. And he's an adjunct professor at Antioch University, where he teaches intercultural conflict and community engagement. His work involves utilizing art and media to promote positive social change. And we are also so fortunate to have with us today Nikki Black, one of the 10 experts featured in the film. Nikki is a writer, sociologist, abolitionist, and womanist. Her thought leadership and radical education work centers around marginalized and oppressed populations in the U.S. Nikki holds a BA in sociology and a Master of Arts in social justice and community organizing, and she combines her education with her lived experience and ancestral knowledge to interrogate anti-Black ideologies and challenge patriarchal cultural norms. All right. Well, Nikki Black and Matthew Solomon, welcome to the Lawyers Guild show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, my pleasure. Okay, so to start us off, Matthew Solomon, what was the impetus for making the film Reimagining Safety? And did you start it before or during or after the protests of summer 2020? And how did you choose who to interview?
Yeah, well, thank you, Maria. It's great to be here. Nikki, it's always great to connect with you also. You know, this film, the short version is, it is a product of my being born and raised in Los Angeles, growing up here, having gone to college for the first time in the 90s at USC and studying sociology, even though I was a music student, but I was studying sociology at the time of the Rodney King beating and the LA riots. So very pivotal moments where I was first learning about the term systemic racism. And that stayed with me. I was a musician, became a filmmaker, started working in conflict resolution as a result of my interest in personal development and professional development. And before the pandemic, I was traveling and doing facilitating and doing service, you know, servicing for conflict resolution. And then the pandemic started and we couldn't go anywhere. And so I decided to go back to school. And so we were dealing with the pandemic. Then George Floyd was murdered by Minneapolis police. And then the uprisings that you were talking about. And so I went into a master's in public administration program thinking like it's been 30 years since Rodney King. How are we still doing this? You know, and of course, 10 years ago, it was Trayvon Martin was murdered. How are we still doing this? Then we get to George Floyd. And so at that point, I was like, you know what? I'm done with the entertainment business. I'm a cis hetero white male. I want to be able to use my privilege and access to be able to get in the doors that I know I can and then pass the mic to the people that most need to be heard. And so I was applying all of my coursework in public administration to the issues with policing and incarceration and got really interested in, well, what are the alternatives then? And so I started reading Angela Davis and Maryam Kaba. Nikki and I knew each other, you know, from we were in community together. So I was already learning from Nikki and a couple other folks. And when it came time to do my final thesis, one of my academic advisors was like, we know you know how to write a paper, but we also know you're a filmmaker. Why don't you do something creative and do a documentary? And I laughed because I'm like, I'm a filmmaker. That's a lot of work. You know, I could write a paper in a weekend, but, you know, and luckily she was like, well, do it anyway. And so I started, you know, looking into who I wanted to interview and reaching out to folks. And the short version is it all came together and here we are. And tonight is actually our 66th community screening in the last year and a half. And it's hosted by KPFK at the Strategy and Soul Center in South LA on MLK Boulevard.
Love it. You know, it's funny because you and I must be contemporaries then, because I was also in college during that time. And yeah, there's something about growing up in Los Angeles and hearing tales of, you know, and going to Watts Towers as a child on a field trip or mm-hmm. growing up near there. And yeah, it's, I could see how that would impact you for sure. Well, Nikki Black, let's turn the mic over to you. So you are one of the luminaries featured in Reimagining Safety. When you were approached to be in the film, I assume Matthew asked you, but I don't know for sure. But what excited you the most about it? And what message were you really trying to get to the audience?
Yeah, Matthew did ask me about it because, as he mentioned, we know each other. And so it was an incredible honor to be even considered, much less, you know, be included in such an incredible project that I'm so proud of. I'm so proud of Matthew for challenging himself, and good on that teacher for forcing you into this project. And it was an immediate yes for me. There was no question. Some people ask you to do things and it's an immediate yes. And so Matthew is one of those people. And then I got to find out who all else was participating, and that finalized, you know, my decision, affirmed, I should say, my decision. I'm in excellent company. And the point that I was trying to make in the film, I think, was that human beings don't need to be policed in these ways. We have the ability, the capacity, the wisdom to govern ourselves. And I think, you know, because I'm an abolitionist and I'm so interested in human behavior and the connections and the patterns, you know, that I see between our political lives and our familial lives, our spiritual lives. And so it was just a really great opportunity to, you know, have that conversation and some deeper conversations, because I think when we talk about social justice or prison abolition, we stay very much in our heads. It's very cerebral, fact-based conversation. And so I felt like I could contribute something a little bit different to the conversation and make the film, you know, a little bit more well-rounded and holistic. So I hope that I was able to do that.
Right. I see, because sometimes people do criticize, you know, Ivy League, ivory tower, people saying, oh, well, you can say that from your ivory tower academic standpoint, but we're living here on the ground, you know, and so it sounds like you were able to draw in from all of those experiences.
Absolutely. We can't discredit or discount lived experience. It is just as important as our, you know, intellectual and our book knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right. And our own intuition about, hey, wait a minute, I know what's right or wrong. And yeah, kind of looking at our own conscience and developing that. Okay, absolutely. Well, let's turn over, yes, back to Matthew Solomon. Speaking of the other luminaries who Nikki mentioned that she was in great company, one of the interviews is of my former law professor, who was my favorite, Jody Armour. And Professor Armour has a really compelling story of his own, where he's very public about it, came from a home where his father was falsely accused, set up, and imprisoned when Professor Armour was only 8 years old. And so he does come from a place where, as we were mentioning, not just ivory tower, he does have, you know, great education, but he actually lived what he's saying. So can you tell us a little bit about that, about Professor Armour's explanation about how imprisoning people doesn't just impact the imprisoned person, it really hurts all of us.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the, I mean, everybody that I interviewed, I walked out of the interviews and I was like, wow, that was really powerful and incredible. And I felt so fortunate to be able to sit with everybody, and everybody shared so openly. And so, yeah, Professor Armour, not only was his father wrongly incarcerated, but he talks about how, as a result of that, his mother took her own life and the impact that had on their family. And that's something that he said, he's like, I really don't talk about this, but because we're talking about it, and it, you know, it goes back to like what Nikki was saying a few minutes ago about lived experience, you know. And so Professor Armour, he talks about in the film theory, and he talks about things like that, but really sharing so openly about how the carceral system, the punishment system, impacted him and influenced him, made a huge difference. And, you know, Jose Gutierrez, who's a social worker who's in the film, talks about the impact, the emotional, the traumatic impact of youth who are policed and their interactions with police. He talks about that in the film. Nikki shares an experience of one of her neighbors, you know, who was killed by Inglewood PD. And so I really wanted, understanding that lived experience is so important, and also understanding that you also need the theory and the statistics and the numbers and things like that, was, you know, why I wanted it to be such a well-rounded, why I knew it needed to be such a well-rounded film.
Yeah. And it also reminds me that, you know, the legal profession, speaking from, you know, my professor was Jody Armour. The legal profession is still one of the least diverse professions in the nation. So of course, if you come from a very, very privileged background as lawyers used to, now it's becoming a little more diverse, but then you get people speaking with authority, with, you know, the credentials on paper. but they've also lived it. So I think that's really cool about the changes that are happening and hopefully will be happening more in the legal profession.
Yeah. Oh, and just I wanted to add one other thing. Hadiya Kennedy, who's a former LAPD detective, is in the film, and she talks about the impact of policing on her as a former police officer, which I felt really, blessed that she shared that so openly as well.
Yeah, that is rare. And I think people talk about it anecdotally, somebody that they know, but you rarely hear anyone open up from the inside of the police force itself. Yeah. So I'd love to hear from both of you on this next question. So back in 2020, a number of non-traditional prosecutors were elected on a platform of reforming the criminal legal system. And that includes the DA here in Los Angeles, George Gascon, who's in the film, as well as Pamela Price in Alameda County and Chesa Boudin, the former public defender who then became DA in San Francisco, and others across the country as well. But Chesa Boudin was recalled after just 2 years, and both Pamela Price and George Gascon have had to fight off recall attempts, horrible criticisms from outside, and even from their inside their own departments. So my question to both of you is, and this one is a hard one, so do you think it's possible to change the system from within? And particularly by within, I mean, you know, the traditional, you know, elected officials, but particularly the DA, who by definition, their job is to prosecute people for crimes. So let me know what your thoughts are on that, please. Nikki, you're already unmuted, so go ahead.
Sure. I think all things are possible. Let me just start there. Let me give you a very Pisces answer. All things are possible. The question is it probable? And I think that this is a question that people have, not just when it comes to abolition, but all the ways we're trying to change society. They're like, can we reform? Can we change from the inside out? And so many people go into policing, law, you know, all of these different spaces to try to change it from the inside out. This is what I have to say. Diversity of methods and approaches is welcomed. Absolutely. However, the system is designed in such a way that it is always going to protect its interests. White dominance, settler colonialism, is not going to allow you to eradicate it. It's not going to succumb to, you know, just enough people showing up with a good heart. If anything, you will be corrupted inside of these systems. And so I don't want to be a pessimist or discourage people. I do think that we need our people everywhere. I do believe that, but I think that what ends up happening is that we become too fixated on one way. And also because white dominance teaches us to fall in line, to follow the rules, to go through the proper procedures and channels, that we're really hyper-focused on doing it the quote unquote right way, as opposed to interrupting all of our socialization into white dominance, all of the socialization that keeps us obedient and seeking approval, honestly, and that we just need to be ungovernable. That's the answer. Ungovernability is really the answer.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that, just in a nutshell?
In a nutshell, relying on the system, relying on these systems instead of relying on each other. Relying on what we already understand to be true. Once again, we're waiting always on these systems to put the stamp of approval on something, as opposed to saying that we have the experience, the lived experience, the knowledge, the practical knowledge to navigate, you know, whatever comes up for us. And so I think that when we're having a conversation about safety, you know, ultimately it's because we understand that we need to have some sort of structures in place in order for, you know, humans to coexist with one another. But we are safe together. In community is where we're going to find safety. And so I just think that we need to lean into that much more than we do.
Yeah, it sounds like when you're talking like a trust, we need to have a little more faith and trust in each other.
And ourselves. We hush
Big
ourselves.
Time.
We police ourselves. We shut ourselves down. And so, yeah, I just think that we need to practice leaning into our own understanding as we have experienced it.
Well, thank you for that. Matthew Solomon, same question. Do you think it's possible? You know, you interviewed George Gascon in your movie, and, you know, yeah, he has suffered a lot, you know, going trying to be the reformer in a prosecutorial office. What do you think at this, where you sit now? Do you think it is possible to reform the system from within? Why or why not?
Yeah, I agree with Nikki that I believe that all things are possible. And I also recognize, especially in the last year and a half, traveling to different cities across the country, hearing from different people, hearing from elected officials, that we need all of it. You know, we need to have people in office that are going to toe the line. We have to, the way I've come to see it recently is it is really about divesting from the system and relying on each other and finding ways to not participate. You know, it's interesting because you brought up DA Gascon, and I did the interviews for this in July, August, 2022. And so he had just been in office for a few months, and they were trying to recall him before he even took office. They were blaming him for the crime wave before he even took office. And so, you know, here I am, I directed this film, edited this film following the murder of George Floyd, hoping to see it make a difference, which it has for communities, but also witnessing the swift backlash to the Black Lives Matter movement, seeing the lies told about critical race theory, you know, being used to weaponize and shut down the Black liberation progress, lies about, you know, DEI that are happening now. Since 2020, there are over 80 cop cities that have been built or are being built across the United States. And 2023 had the highest amount of police killings in the last 15 years since it's been put on record by independent sources. Over 1,200 people killed last year by police. So, yeah, the system is not for the people. And the police are not for the people and never will be. And so it really is. And what the last part is, we've had elected officials that have run on abolitionist platforms or progressive platforms that once they've gotten in office, for whatever reason, have then voted to increase the pay for police officers or hire more police officers. And this happens, you know, across the country, not just in LA. So it really is, you know, if we have a government, you know, if we continue to have a government, we have to get people in there who are going to have the interests of the people in mind and stick to those interests. And we also have to find ways to not rely on the government and the system that is not here to support us anyway.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And let me remind listeners that this is KPFK 90.7 FM. This is the Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Maria Hall. Co-host Jim Lafferty is traveling today, but he'll be back next week. We are here speaking with Matthew Solomon and Nikki Black about the award-winning documentary film, Reimagining Safety. So I wanted to, you know, people just coming in, can you, Matthew, let people know where they can watch Reimagining Safety?
Sure. Well, you can watch it tonight in South LA at the Strategy and Soul Center on MLK Boulevard at 6:30 p.m. And you can go to reimaginingsafetymovie.com. We're on streaming services, so we're on multiple streaming services. We have educational distribution, and we are continuing to travel around the country. So we'll be in Harlem on November 17th. We're going to be in Denver December 5th and 6th. And then Atlanta is going to be our 70th screening, and that's going to be December 14th.
Okay. October 22nd. Also, I had meant to mention this in the intro. October 22nd is a national day against to end police brutality, incarceration, and criminalization of a generation, if I'm saying it correctly. It was the 29th anniversary. So I know that in a lot of these communities, especially the cop cities, they were having community events on that. But as we can see, probably it made zero mainstream news headlines. So that's sort of the difference between 2020 and 2024. But yes, I digress. But hopefully on the Lawyers Guild show, we can continue the dialogue. So I wanted to briefly play the MP3 of a segment of the film. If D'Angelo can hear me, I think he can, our wonderful engineer. D'Angelo, can we go ahead and play that segment now?
America has never been a place where we had democracy and equality and freedom and liberty for all and justice for all, and all we have to do is get back to that.
Race in this country has never really been removed from the political dialogue.
Because we won't reckon with our past, because we will let older people say, oh, that's so old, and you know, let's not talk about that anymore. Slavery was so long ago. We haven't had it for 200 years. This is, you know, not realizing that we never reckoned, we never repaired any of it at all.
Police are violence workers. You know, we've been sold this false choice of policing or nothing, which has been used to terrorize people into accepting policing when there's a whole long list of things that they would rather have that they know would help address the problems in their communities.
When we say abolish the police, we are saying we do not want policing as we know it to exist anymore.
What people don't realize when we're talking about abolition is that we're really talking about the fact that we want you to be a decent person. that it's going to require that you relate to people.
We created a report and it's called Defunding the Police, Defining the Way Forward for HRM. Like, the myth is that we need all these people in jail while they'll be running around the streets, and that's not true. So I really try to shift us from believing that defunding is radical to recognizing that what is actually radical is investing billions of dollars into policing. So, like, not agree that defunding the police is this radical lefty, like communist, Marxist, whatever, that it's actually practical, it's good social policy, it makes sense, and here's a roadmap to it.
This is not some kind of abstract utopian envisioning. This is a very practical programmatic intervention.
When you begin to think differently and you begin to look at people through the eyes of the humanity in all of us and, you know, sort of that love for humankind, your thinking and your approach to the work starts to be very different.
Right, that was a segment from Reimagining Safety, an award-winning documentary film directed by Matthew Solomon, who's here with us today, and featuring the voice of Nikki Black, and the, of course, not just the voice, but the brains there. Matthew Solomon, before we take our station ID break, can you just tell us who some of those voices were that we just heard?
Yeah, thank you. LA County District Attorney George Gascon, Professor Jody Armour from USC Law, Dr. L. Jones from Halifax, Nova Scotia, Alex Vitale, who's a sociologist and professor in Brooklyn, New York, and he authored the book End of Policing, which is incredible. Hawk Newsom of Black Lives Matter New York and Black Opportunities, Gina Viola, who ran for mayor in 2022 on an abolitionist platform, Jose Gutierrez, who I mentioned before, who's a social worker and therapist. Hadia Kennedy is a former LAPD detective. And Senate Devermont, who's also known as Mr. Checkpoint, he films police and has the AFTP Foundation.
And Nikki Black.
And Nikki Black, of course.
Woohoo! All right. Well, let us go ahead then and take our very quick station ID break. First, let me remind listeners, it's KPFK Fun Drive time. I believe this is the last day, so please go to kpfk.org and keep our airwaves free, independent, liberating, and strong. Okay, station ID break coming now.
On Wednesday evening, October 30th at 6:30 p.m., KPFK will be holding a benefit screening of the award-winning documentary Reimagining Safety, about community alternatives to abusive policing. The screening takes place at the Strategy and Soul Center, 3546 West Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard at Crenshaw. After the film, a panel will discuss the implications of the film and recent organizing in Los Angeles and take audience comments and questions. That panel will include filmmaker Matthew Solomon, Channing Martinez of the Labor Community Strategy Center, KPFK Interim General Manager Michael Novick, KPFK programmers including Gina Viola and Matt Cedillo, and a number of community activists. More information and tickets to the benefit screening are available at kpfk.org. Again, that's Wednesday, October 30th at 6:30 p.m. for a screening of Reimagining Safety at the Strategy and Soul Center.
Lawyers Guild Show. I'm Maria Hall, here with, been speaking with the director of Reimagining Safety, which you just heard a great PSA about. And that's Matthew Solomon, along with Nikki Black, who is one of the voices featured in the film. And we are having a great conversation. So just to let you know, if you're just tuning in, Reimagining Safety has been screened at more than 60 community events across the country, and it was just named Best Film by Evident Change as part of their National Media for a Just Society Awards. It's available on multiple streaming services, and you can watch it tonight in LA. So let me go ahead now and ask yet another challenging question, this time for Nikki Black. So here we are, 2024. It's been well over 4 years since summer 2020. And at that time, we saw the largest protests in U.S. history after the murder of George Floyd. And of course, it was as if a dam had burst. So from your perspective as an educator and sociologist, why are people no longer in the streets demanding an end to police brutality and racism? What's changed? We obviously didn't fix everything. So is there hope of getting the public re-engaged and getting back to the dialogue of reforming our system or starting anew?
This is an excellent question. It's a question that I think, you know, we're posing as a new one, but I think this has been challenging activists and organizers for as long as there has been activism and organizing. And what we see is a huge surge of people, right? A mass awakening, and then all of this activity, and then what Myesha T. Hill in her book, Heal Your Way Forward, describes as ghosting. And so I think it's important first to name the fact that people are still doing this work. I think that we kind of forget that. We go, okay, there's no fanfare, you know, people aren't in the streets and nobody cares. Nobody's doing. And what that does is it just erases Black, Indigenous, people of color, other marginalized individuals who have dedicated their entire lives to this work and various other types of, you know, social justice and activism work. For longer than you or I have been alive, there are people that have been plugging away, trying to find the answers and to remake society. And so I think that's just important to put that out there first, that the people who have been in the trenches are still there. They're still working, and they will be there. And so I think that brings us to a conversation about white dominance and what it does, how it impacts the psyche and makes us think that our individual contribution is the end all be all, right? It's called saviorism. And so there's this idea that like, if we individually don't do the work, it's not going to get done. And what I want to say is that while you're welcome, and absolutely 100%, you should make a contribution to co-creating a just, equitable, safe, sustainable society for everybody. If you decide you want to tap out, then we're still going to get liberated because that's just what it is. So we're still doing the work, but white urgency was what impacted the performative nature of the work that was done in 2020. And lots of the people who flooded into the streets and, you know, were suddenly very zealous and on fire for social justice and racial justice, it was a performance. It was a performance. And I'm not faulting or judging those people because we don't have the tenacity and the grit of generations past. And we also haven't understood how important this work is when we haven't been impacted by the systems. And so people were very excited and wanted to be a part of something. The energy was electric and magnetizing, and everybody came into the space. And a lot of people just didn't have the foundations to continue and, you know, to sustain this work. So we saw quite a bit of regression. And that is absolutely normal from a sociological perspective, from the perspective of an educator, right? If you don't do a thorough job of addressing a problem at the root, if you treat something at the surface level, I usually refer to like bacteria making it resistant, right? If you don't properly treat it, then you create resistant bacteria, right? And so a lot of the education that people received during that time wasn't proper in-depth education. And as I mentioned earlier, we wanted to keep this work very practical, very statistic-based. And the way that human beings understand our existence in the world and our place and our identity has absolutely nothing to do with logic, nothing at all. So when we don't challenge, you know, people's self-concept, when we don't address trauma, when we don't heal anything, when we don't take into consideration people's nervous systems, then we're just throwing a bunch of facts and stats at people and then patting them on their back and sending them on their way and telling them best of luck. And they're not going to be able to sustain this work. And so it's something that I call the white urgency cycle. It is incredibly violent. It is incredibly violent. But the remedy for that is more in-depth liberation work. Not just anti-oppression, not just anti-racism, because racism is a symptom of a larger problem in our society. And so we really just need to do the deep work.
And as we were talking, I was remembering that during those protests, we had been in lockdown. So we right. had all been suddenly having this a bit of an existential crisis. All of our habits were broken for that minute. And we had the opportunity to sit there and say, wait a minute, this is wrong. What I'm seeing is wrong. Whereas if we were busy with our regular work schedule or in traffic and we heard about it, it might be like, oh, that's terrible, but I need to go home and do this. And then I need to drive to my next meeting. And I need, so it was like as if people had a minute to just take five and then really appreciate the horror of what happened.
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, being in lockdown, it helped the movement as much as it harmed the movement because people were also in a hurry to get back to normal life and business as usual, right? And sitting with yourself and confronting how you are complicit in generations of harm and violence is incredibly painful. So it can be invigorating at first, especially in a system of dominance and punishment where we kind of thrive on self-loathing a little bit. So I think that people kind of got off on that initially, like I'm so bad and I feel guilt and they wanted to cry in the mirror. But after a while, that hurts, right? You can't keep that. You can't keep that up. It's too emotionally taxing. And so people were looking for a way to escape. And as soon as they got the opportunity to skip out into the sunshine and not pay attention to racism anymore, they took it.
Yeah. And I do remember, and then I have a question for Matthew, but I do remember one of my friends, she was like, why is everyone under the sun calling me and asking how they can be a good ally? She's like, I'm not a spokesperson for all Black people. She's like, I don't know how they can be a good ally. Like,
yeah. Yeah, that happened. That was a trend. That was a moment. The Black squares. And, you know, it's, we can redeem ourselves, though. You know, it just requires a recommitment to the work. And so what I'm encouraging people to do as we approach the season of ghosting, because anytime there is a presidential election, there is ghosting afterward, right? We're super aware, we're out in the streets, we're politically active, and then we act like we don't have to do anything for 4 years. And then we find ourselves in the same situation 4 years later, and then we're crying again, right? And so as we approach the season of ghosting, I'm just encouraging people to recommit to this work.
Yeah, and perfect segue for our host station, KPFK, because KPFK is one of those rare sources where you can get independent media and other voices and in-depth interviews like this one. So I do hope people will become members because, hey, whoever wins next week, we're, you know, KPFK is always on the line. Like, no matter what, no matter who gets in, whether it's on the offense or more on the defense, KPFK is there. And I hope people will realize this is a community and this is where people are trying to come and get the word out and challenge you to think everyone creatively and with hope. So, okay, so this next one, we'll first hear from Matthew, but I would like to hear from both of you, actually. So given that the film is called Reimagining Safety, let's help listeners start reimagining. Tell us some of the ideas that were discussed in the film as alternatives to policing and incarceration.
Yeah, thank you. And, you know, what this ties into what Nikki said originally about how there are people still doing the work, like the people that have been in the trenches. And so as I've been doing these screenings across the country, over 100 organizations have been hosts and sponsors. And so they do everything from violence prevention and community response as alternatives to police response to housing justice, eco justice, you know, food. At the core for me, what I take away from the film as the director was, when we care about each other, we do things differently. And we're not rooted in punishment, but we're rooted in care and love. And how can I support you? What do you need? You know, and this is also talked about in restorative justice in the film as ways to address harms that are caused. So that's like, for me, that's that. Like, when, if I care about my neighbor and they're having, you know, a mental breakdown, I'm going to go over there and be like, hey, what do you need? How can I support you? I'm not going to be calling 911 and having the police show up because I know there's a much higher probability that violence is going to take place. You know, if there's and actually Gina talks about this, Gina Viola, like she, you know, she talks about knowing your unhoused neighbors and getting to know them as people and having conversations with them. That creates community and safety. And when we have our needs met, when we have resources, what society labels as crime comes down naturally. And then we don't need the militarized armed force to come in and, you know, enact violence.
Sounds like you're talking about consequences too, that it's like you care. So you care about the long-term consequences is, you know, my neighbor, you know, somebody who I want to keep my relationship with, you know, is it somebody who I want to work on better communication with?
Yeah. And it also, you know, I might not necessarily want to keep a long-term relationship with them, but I care about them on a human level. And I get from my conflict resolution work, when we can restore each other to being whole and complete, that's when we're able to create together. That's when we're able to breathe and live and thrive. But when there's the injustices and the harms and the like the walls that come up, that's when there's the friction and the potential for violence and harm that comes about.
Okay, so you're saying you don't have to necessarily like everyone for this to work.
No, you don't.
Phew.
And it really is just like seeing the humanity in one another.
Right. Absolutely. No, thank you for that. Nikki, would you like to chime in?
Absolutely. Listen, it's very rare that I like people. I don't like a lot of people. And yet I still honor their humanity, you know, right? Their right to, you know, exist and enjoy their life and have access to all the things that I desire and for them to raise their children and, you know, just enjoy life, right? And so I think that, first of all, we need healing justice, which I'm so glad that people are really talking about that. We haven't really had a lot of conversations about that until, you know, maybe the past decade or two. That's been brought to the forefront. And so I think that that is a way for us to get away from policing, right? Of course, mental health care. I think we trivialize that. And we kind of just say, yeah, like we need more mental health care. We need more mental health care, but not understanding how holistic it needs to be and not really understanding how comprehensive and widespread our endeavors to make sure that people have access to mental health care is. We relegate, well, it's because we've marginalized, you know, we've pushed people into the margins and ostracized them based on their lack of mental wellness, right? And so because we have really criminalized people who we deem to be crazy, right? It's a stigma. And we think those people over there are crazy. And that's what mental health care is about. No, every human being with a brain needs mental health care, right? In the same way that we need physical health care. And so mental health care is a major part of that. I talk a lot about mutual aid, but I mean, not just mutual aid too. We need to talk about radical wealth redistribution. And, you know, people aren't ready for that conversation because they feel like they earned what they earned and their money is their money, right? And so there's so many different moving parts. It's not just about restorative justice, which is certainly useful, but I like to travel more in the direction of transformative justice, which takes it from these individual people and these scenarios and starts to look at the larger systems and how they are creating the outcomes that we are surviving. And so we have to deal with that. We have to address our own internalized depressions and our own socialization, right? And understand that policing is a form of social control. And to do the work of really creating safety for people is going to require more work. It's going to require more work. It's just like when you're parenting. And if you're not going to spank, then you have to take all these other steps. You have to do all these other things. And nobody has time for that. So why don't we just pop them in the mouth and send them on their way, right? That's what policing is. That's what prisons are. We disappear people that we don't think are worthy of the time and the effort that it takes to support in society. And so it really takes us addressing that and redeciding that we are all worthy of that type of time and attention and care, and holding ourselves accountable to that. Policing and prisons don't actually make anyone accountable because, again, we just get to shove them over there, forget about them. We don't have to change anything about our society. No one has to change their behavior. We can just be brutal. We can just punish, right? And so I think that, you know, it feels and sounds overwhelming maybe, but at the end of the day, we understand how to go about caring for one another. It's just that it's been programmed out of us. And so we need to return to our ways of coexisting with one another.
And can I ask you just to define very briefly the concept of mutual aid?
Mutual aid is really just a way of providing resources to people in your community in whatever capacity that you can. And so a lot of times you'll see, you know, maybe someone needs help with their rent or someone needs help with a medical bill, right? And as a community, we'll come together and we'll contribute whatever we have. I have $10, you have $100, and we'll make sure that this person is taken care of. And it probably sounds familiar because we all already practice it. People of color specifically practice this, right? We are used to coming together and helping pay for the quinceañera, helping pay for, you know, grandma's dentures, whatever we need to do to make sure that everybody has everything that they need. And so it's really a function of being in community with one another.
Well, thank you for that. Okay, so I have another, and I knew this hour was going to fly by, but I do want to get this question in. So if each of you could pick one elected official to show reimagining safety, and they would commit to actually listening, who would you choose and why, and what would you hope that they would take away from it? Matthew, you want to start?
Not really. It's a really profound question. And if you would have asked me that a year ago, I would have been like, oh, the mayor, the governor. And in the last year, I've seen how the members of those offices, especially here in Los Angeles, have gone in the opposite direction, even though Karen Bass at one time was an activist. I think the biggest impact that I've seen has been with city council members. And for instance, Tim McOsker came to one of our first screenings in San Pedro and was really blown away by the film. And I think it was about 9 months later, co-authored a bill to reduce the number of LAPD contacts, the types of calls that they respond to. So I don't have a single name, but city council seems to be the best place. And those folks seem to be creating the bills and the things that actually run the city.
Wow. Well, how about you, Nikki?
James T. Butts, mayor of Inglewood, California. James Butts. I am a product of Inglewood. I'm from Inglewood. I went to school there. I raised my children there. I was raised there. And James T. Butts he's been the mayor since 2011. And he was at Inglewood PD for 19 years. He's a cop. He's a cop, right? He became a deputy sheriff. He was at he was the chief of police for Santa Monica for 15 years. So we got a cop as our mayor. And I don't know that I have hoped that he would come away with anything, you know, specific, honestly. Like I don't feel like I need to project my own desires and preferences on other people. He's gonna get what he get, but at the end of the day, he's gonna know that we out here. He's gonna know I'm out here. So I want him to see the film. I would love that.
Yeah, he made the news this morning. Some community members calling him out on something, and I was like, that would make a great show next week. So stay tuned.
There you go.
So we are running out of time. So one of the most important questions is, tell us about some of the resources and support available for listeners who want to learn and do more about creating alternatives to militarized policing and incarceration.
I'll go ahead and go first so that Matthew can have the last word. Since it is actually his film. Resources. Critical Resistance is a great resource. There are various chapters. The one in Los Angeles did stop some jail construction. So get in touch with Critical Resistance in your area. There's the Center for Justice Innovation that's doing great work. There's the California Healing Justice organization. They do programming to reduce reliance on policing and prisons and things of that nature. And they lean more into restorative healing practices. And then there's Initiate Justice, which is another great organization that you can reach out to. They organize people directly impacted by the carceral system. And there's also the nationalbailout.org, which raises funds to bail mamas out And, you know, children are impacted by our criminal punishment system probably more than anyone. And so those are great places for people to start. And of course, there's my own organization, Interrupt Series, interruptseries.com. I'm doing lots of educational work over there to, you know, foster an abolitionist perspective and work and help people be ungovernable.
Wonderful. What was the website again for your, what is your website again?
Interruptseries.com.
All right. And that is Nikki Black. All right. Matthew Solomon.
Yeah. So all of that, I had several of those on my list also. And then obviously reimaginingsafetymovie.com. There is a resources page on the website. I would add BLM Grassroots is doing great work here. The Black Panther Party of Washington State and the National Panther Party are doing all of these things, you know, that we were talking about. And there are chapters across the country that they're involved with. That's where I would go.
Awesome. And I guess since I was just mentioning the October 22nd coalition, that's another, they have a great resource. And then also Stop Cop City. There are Stop Cops all over the country, and National Lawyers Guild is keeping an eye on that. And yeah, there's really so much that is there.
Anti-Police Terror Project, APTP, they're based out of Oakland. Their Sacramento chapter has sponsored several screenings of the film. So they're another great resource as well.
Wonderful. Well, I've really enjoyed this past hour getting to know you both, Matthew Solomon, Nikki Black, and good luck with your, with the show tonight. And I hear it is a benefit for KPFK, which we thank you for that. And, you're doing great work. Keep it up. Thank you so much, listeners. By the way, you were listening to my interview with Matthew Solomon and Nikki Black, and the film is called Reimagining Safety. And you can also get it if you can't make it out tonight. Matthew?
We're streaming on Amazon, Tubi, YouTube, and Google Play. And reimaginingsafetymovie.com is the website, and Reimagining Safety Movie is our Instagram.
Well, thank you so, so very much to both of you, Matthew Solomon, Nikki Black. We would love to have you back anytime, and I will keep you on speed dial. And I guess that is the end of our show for today. I'm Maria Hall. This is KPFK 90.7 FM. Please remember to put in that pledge. It is the last day of pledge drive, so please give to KPFK. It is going to be more important than ever, regardless of where the election goes. We need free speech radio. We need to have independent, intelligent, critical thinking dialogue. So thanks, everyone. Thanks to our board op. Thanks to KPFK. And we will see you next week.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Daddy, what's a radio?
A radio? That's the thing in the car where we hear the news and music while we drive you to school.
So a radio's a part of a car?
No. I mean, yes, it can be part of a car, but you can get radios by themselves. A radio is like your phone, but you just listen to it. You don't talk to it.
But I like talking on the phone.
But it's very important to listen sometimes. You can learn a lot from the radio. Your mom and I like to listen to KPFK. It gives us a lot of information we don't hear on other radio stations. Plus, they also play lots of really cool music.
Daddy, could I please get a radio? I'd like to start learning things and hear cool music.
Sure, we could talk about getting you your own radio.
Great! I'd like a radio that comes in an electric blue Tesla.
Radio first, car later. We've got to get you started listening to KPFK.
You can help keep KPFK on air by making your donation at kpfk.org or by calling 818-985-5735, option 2. Thanks for keeping radio and KPFK alive and well.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! In-depth news coverage is becoming a rare commodity in today's media landscape. There's a straightforward reason. It's no longer profitable for commercial media. Serious journalism is expensive. It takes time to prepare. It requires a large and talented team of researchers, reporters, editors, and producers. That's why listener-supported news and information on KPFK is more important than ever. We continue to bring you comprehensive coverage from skilled, dedicated journalists because you continue to support the work we do here all year round. Please continue to support KPFK, all the vital work that's done at this Pacifica station. Call 818-985-5735.